Welcome to the Bible's Greatest Mysteries from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and we are having the best time recording these programs. In fact, if you watched last week, you know that Derek has a brand new book out, and we've told you all about that, and I hope you've bought it. But this week we have an assignment, and you gave it away last week.
I did.
Let's make sure that you didn't mistake it, because you never know with Tom Horn.
Well, and there's also things that Tom wants us to discuss, too, items in the news.
I know. So there you go. Let's see what Tom has put in the bag for this week.
Oh, well.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
A lot of legendary things that we discussed, but turn out that the archaeologists are finding they're not so legendary, are they?
Tom always puts up the best stories, and if you haven't watched his news feed, you need to go to skywatchtv.com. He's got all of those stories there. Well, Aaron Lipkin, of course, he's confirmed. Aaron Lipkin is our guest for the next few weeks, and it's going to be incredible.
Oh, yeah. He's like us. He's a big fan of archaeology, but he's got the advantage of living amongst the archaeology there. He can drive to the sites and actually walk amongst the stones.
Oh, how nice. Well, speaking of archaeology, this story that Tom brought up, it's really interesting. King Solomon's riches?
Yes. This is something that has been kind of legendary for many years. King Solomon's Mines. In fact, wasn't that a very famous story?
Very famous story.
Alan Quatermain.
Yes, exactly.
But it turns out that King Solomon's Mines actually existed back in the early Iron Age, and that archaeologists have found what they're calling the source of King Solomon's wealth.
You know, strangely enough, I'm looking at here, it says it's in Timnah, Israel's Timnah Valley. And
yes,
I believe that's on our itinerary for the 2022 tour of Israel.
Yes, it is. It's down in the Negev, the desert south of Israel. And it apparently this was a very productive copper mining operation back in the day. In fact, the Edomites had been mining there previously, but Solomon really exploited it. And because copper was such an important metal back in that period of history, that this helped make the Kingdom of Israel around in the 10th century B.C., one of the wealthiest in the ancient Near East.
Oh, my goodness. Timnah is one of those areas that I think most of us who love the Bible lands and read about them in the Bible, we don't even know exists.
Mm-hmm. It was a, it's interesting because like many technological advances in history,
mm-hmm.
they tend to be driven by
need,
and often that need is military,
mm-hmm.
Technological. If you come up with a new way of a new weapons system that's superior to those of your enemies, you wind up suddenly able to defend yourself better or conquer.
Need or greed. I mean,
you just watched
a documentary recently about a pharaoh in Egypt, Djoser, very famous stepped pyramid,
mm-hmm.
that he had his mine workers, the quarrymen, they were working with copper tools. And because they ran through those tools so quickly,
right,
he needed millions of those tools. So he needed copper. There's no copper in Egypt.
There's not. But there is quite a bit in the Sinai Peninsula and into the Negev.
And in Timnah. And
right,
Pharaoh had sent his soldiers into these areas to scout it out and, if necessary, take over the land.
Yeah. Well, Djoser was in the third millennium B.C.,
mm-hmm.
very early on. But copper's still an important metal today because of its conductivity, but back in the day, it was a technological breakthrough because the ages that archaeologists use to describe the periods of history, moving from the Stone Age to the current technological age, went through the Copper Age, then the Bronze Age,
mm-hmm.
when we learned to mix tin and arsenic with the copper in order to create bronze, which is a harder metal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, copper was better for weaponry than, say, making stone. You know, flint, useful, but copper, better.
But tin's not available in the Levant, is it?
I don't know. I know that there are places elsewhere in the Mediterranean where you can get tin. I know that the Cornwall in England was a very important source of tin.
That's why Rome wanted that so badly.
Yes, because well, it has other uses as well, but when smelters discovered that by alloying these metals, you could come up with something much harder, bronze, and then when they realized that you could work with iron and developed iron around the time of Joshua and the conquest of Canaan, that was the beginning of the Iron Age, which is why the Old Testament, by the way, mentions that during the period of the Judges, the Israelites weren't allowed to have iron weapons by the Philistines. They had to go down there to get their tools sharpened. But as they developed harder and harder metals for weaponry and for plows and so forth, life became easier and better. But again, the military aspect of it, the military need, drove a lot of this. And Solomon, again, found a very rich source of copper down in the Negev. This is not far from Petra.
No, it isn't. This is very, very interesting. You and I have talked about Petra many times. In fact, we've got a book planned for the future about Petra. But King Solomon definitely had his men scouting all over the known world to get the riches that he needed, not just for the military, but also to decorate the buildings, including the Lord's temple.
And partnered with Hiram of Phoenicia, Sidon, Tyre, rather, to send trade expeditions around Africa and around the Mediterranean to bring those riches back to Israel.
He did. And speaking of riches and the Lord's temple, one of the very first altars that was built for the Lord here, not here, but in Israel, not here, we don't have it here, in Israel was Joshua's altar. And Aaron has been there. He took us there.
Yes, that was fascinating because even Israeli archaeologists, many of them who are very secular, tend to view the story of Moses, Joshua, and the conquest of Canaan as a myth that was invented to give Israel a national history, a sense of national identity. But around 1980, an archaeologist named Adam Zertal found that altar, and we were blessed to see it. And we'll tell you about that altar, the discovery of the altar, and
how you can go see it.
Yes. When the Bible's Greatest Mysteries continues, we'll come back with Aaron Lipkin and the story of Joshua's altar.
Call now and get Pentagon analyst Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis' brand new book, Give Me Liberty, Not Marxism, along with his groundbreaking best-selling book, Progressive Evil, and Dr. Thomas Horn's explosive original expose on the Marxist-driven deep state cabal, Shadowland, with the Shadowland Companion DVD. This is an exclusive offer for our Skywatch television audience. Yours for a donation of $35 plus shipping and handling. Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis' brand new book, Give Me Liberty, Not Marxism, examines what current American leaders, including the Biden administration and his allies, intend for the United States that may very well usher in a biblical prophetic end times, reveals the growing support in America for Marxist ideologies, socialism, communism, progressivism, and what that means for America, explains the Marxist satanic and occult history, which influences America's ongoing cultural revolution, provides Christ-centric and pre-rapture recommendations, should we come under the grip of a Marxist one-world government, and so much more. This incredible special offer also includes Colonel Robert McGinnis' best-selling work, Progressive Evil, which reveals precisely how radicals in government and in our very own communities are steadfastly redefining America's rights, institutions, and ideals, making her globally irrelevant for the end times. But that's not all. You'll also receive Dr. Thomas Horn's groundbreaking expose, Shadowland, with the Shadowland Companion DVD, which includes the original five-part Skywatch television investigative series deemed too hot for network television, not available anywhere outside this exclusive offer. This book and DVD series exposes the deep state actors from the Clintons and Obama to Joe Biden and the occult elite who are at war with Christianity and America's destiny, demonstrates the diabolical body count lists and sacrificed whistleblowers who have attempted to thwart the plans of the global elite, and discloses the occult concepts and practices of a mysterious D.C.-based shadow empire. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of $85. Yours now for a donation of only $35, plus shipping and handling while supplies last. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime Skywatch TV exclusive offer, the Give Me Liberty Patriot Package, available now. at SkyWatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
The Bible's Greatest Mysteries is part of SkyWatch TV, a viewer-supported ministry. To learn more about us and our mission at Whispering Ponies Ranch, log on to SkyWatchTV.com. Every episode of The Bible's Greatest Mysteries is available on the SkyWatch TV channel for Roku and Apple TV, and at our free mobile app. Follow us online at SkyWatchTV.com.
This is The Bible's Greatest Mysteries. I'm Derek Gilbert, and joining us in studio is a gentleman who's facilitated our tours of Israel and showed us some archaeological sites that most visitors to Israel don't get to see. We're talking specifically this week about Joshua's Altar. He is not only a tour guide, he is a publisher and a video producer. He's responsible for the Hidden Israel series of DVDs, a book that I found very intriguing, and this is one of the sites we visited. Sisera's Secret, the book by the archaeologist Adam Zertal. That's a reference to the Canaanite general who was defeated by Barak and Deborah and got a tent peg in his head for his trouble. And we saw his fortress. But Joshua's Altar, also a fascinating site that most places, most tourists to Israel don't see. We welcome the CEO of Lipkin Tours, Aaron Lipkin. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Derek. It's great to be here.
Joshua's Altar, many of the claims about sensational discoveries related to the Bible aren't really backed by substantial evidence, but Professor Zertal, when he stumbled across this site, I think has found compelling evidence that this was, in fact, the site of the altar of Joshua.
Yes, and I think it's important to remember that Zertal, unlike the Christian archaeologists that came to Israel in the early 20th century, he didn't come to look for the altar. He actually was brought up believing that the Bible is a mythology, that the stories there never happened. When he learned archaeology in the Tel Aviv University, the professors there told him, they taught him, that all the stories are a fairy tale and they never happened. And so when Adam Zertal is coming and doing the emergency archaeological survey of Samaria, he's not looking specifically for biblical evidence, archaeological evidence for biblical events. He's just documenting. And I think that when you come from that perspective, and you're coming from an objective perspective, and you're going into the biblical heartland of Israel, suddenly you start finding things that really coincide with the historical events in the Bible. And so when Adam Zertal is roaming Mount Eval in Samaria and suddenly stumbles upon this pile of stone and starts excavating it, he's taking the outer layer of stones. Suddenly this structure emerges. And all the time, he's not looking at the Bible. He's not looking at the historical Jewish writings about altars. He's just seeing a structure that he doesn't know how to explain. And what an archaeologist does, he goes to libraries. He checks in the Babylonian, the Assyrian, the Egyptian parallels to see if he can understand the structure, and he can't find anything. It takes another person to come to Adam Zertal and show him the way the altar looked like at the Second Temple period for him to understand that it was there all along. The evidence for it being an Israelite altar is actually in the Jewish writings, in the Hebrew writings. And when you read the book of Leviticus, and it's very clearly stated by God that when you build an altar made out of stone, it has to be made out of field stones. It has to have a way to go up to the Bama, to the higher court, that is not with stairs, because stairs might expose modest places in the body. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have a ramp. And suddenly he shows him the picture of the Second Temple altar. And you have to understand, the Second Temple altar is 1,400 or 1,300 years after the ceremony that was conducted by Joshua. So what you're seeing is that the tradition of building an altar kept the same for 1,300 years at least until the time of Jesus in the Second Temple period. And that's astonishing.
So he approached this from a secular perspective, and to his eye, what he saw was an Iron Age cult site, a religious site, that he couldn't identify until somebody said, look at this, and he realized, wait a minute, the stories in our scriptures are true.
Right, and so when he saw it, suddenly his whole world changed. I mean, his whole view of the Bible, of history, of biblical history changed. He looked at that Orthodox Jew that gave him that book, and he said, you know, you understand what this means? This means that this is the altar of Joshua, and if this is the altar of Joshua, then Joshua existed, and Moses existed, and the Exodus happened. And, you know, this Orthodox Jew is looking at him and saying, of course, what do you mean? I mean, of course they happened. But for Adam Zertal, they really did not happen. They were made-up stories from, you know, the year 800 or 700 during the reign of Josiah. But suddenly he sees that the biblical tradition is very accurate, and the stories that were written in the Bible are true historical events. Hmm. And so for him, that was really something that changed his view. And you could see that in his different discoveries, he started reading the Bible to better understand the discoveries that he found in the field. And so the Bible, this dynamic of going to the field, discovering the biblical remnants, the biblical walls, the biblical towns, and then going to the Bible, reading what the Bible is saying, to better understand what they found archaeologically.
Now, this discovery was about 40 years ago, and we were blessed to visit the site back in 2019. It is definitely not a tourist destination, and yet you managed to get us there with an escort from the IDF, which was very much appreciated. We never felt unsafe, but it was clearly something that has not been turned into a destination for tourists. This past year, we saw the local Palestinian Authority administrators begin to dismantle some of the outer ring of stone, a fence, if you will, for the substrate to build a road. How was that changed the perception of the site in the minds of Israelis?
Well, you know, I'm telling you, that morning when I started receiving text messages from friends, you know, did you hear the Palestinians destroy Joshua's altar? That was my nightmare. I mean, you know, thinking that maybe a bulldozer can come and just bulldoze the whole site, for me was horrifying. But later on, I understood that the damage was done to the perimeter wall around Joshua's altar. Now, for someone standing there, it just looks like a terrace, but that's actually a reconstruction of the ancient wall that was the wall of the compound that made it clear where is the holy area and the unholy area. And Adam Zertal said that is one of the footprint structures that the Israelite built in Israel. We're going to talk about that in another program.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there immediately that day. I brought some Christian volunteers with me, and there were some young Jews from communities in the area. And what we started doing was, you know, lifting stones and starting to rebuild the wall together. You know, and I stopped for a second and I saw Jews and Christians together, you know, saving our Judeo-Christian heritage, our biblical heritage. And that was so moving. But Balaam, and when we read about Balaam in the Bible, that he came to curse the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he blessed them. And what the Palestinians did unintentionally was to bring this site that is really unknown for many Israelis to the news. And we started seeing thousands of Israelis coming to visit the site. You know, I've never seen this line of cars parking, you know, all the way up to the parking lot where mm-hmm. we were with the bus. We saw young people coming and worshiping there and praying there. And believe it or not, even Naftali Bennett, our prime minister, Israel's prime minister, came to the altar, stood on the altar, and did an amazing presentation about how the Jewish people is not going to let the Palestinians, the Muslims, ruin our national heritage sites.
This is very close to Nablus. I think people need to understand that it's very close to an area that has been a hotbed of conflict for many, many years. It's the site of ancient Shechem. The tomb of Joseph is there, and Jews who visit the tomb are often subject to violence. What is the state of Israel? Has Prime Minister Bennett made any definite plans for the future of Joshua's altar?
Well, you know, unfortunately, politicians are very good at promising and
in
talking.
Israel too, huh? Yeah.
And so, you know, there hasn't been anything going on there since. The only thing that really happened was that the altar came up to the consciousness of Israelis and the Israeli government, the Israeli army. The Palestinians are much more careful now with what they're doing close to that site. But when you're looking at the archaeological sites in Israel, you see that there is a lot of damage that's being made by the Muslim population in Judea and Samaria. It's not intentionally with an agenda to erase the biblical sites and the connection between the Jewish people and the land. It's mostly robbers that come into those archaeological sites,
right.
Just excavate to find coins and, you know, different expensive artifacts. But the problem is that the fact that Israel is not ruling Judea and Samaria like it should be creates a vacuum where people just come in and do what they want. And so, unfortunately, many sites are being damaged. And what we're doing, us group of people who care about biblical archaeology, is to try and pressure the politicians to take a stand and protect these sites. But it's definitely not high on their priority list. Mm.
What kind of efforts are being made to go back to these sites and re-examine some of the material that may have been excavated, looking for additional clues or evidence as to the origin of the site?
Well, unfortunately, the site itself, Joshua's Altar, is in Area B, which is under the archaeological responsibility of the Palestinian Authority. So we cannot really excavate there until Israel regains its full control over the site, and I believe that it will happen one day. There is still a lot to excavate there. And, you know, our listeners and watchers really need to understand the importance of this site. This site is, I would say, the first temple of the Israelites in the land of Israel. One of the discoveries of Zertales is that the site itself was used for 70 years. Now, the Bible doesn't talk about the site being a central place of worship for many years. It's just a place for one ceremony, one day, blessings and curses in Joshua 8. But the archaeological evidence shows that after that ceremony, the Israelites treated that site as the central place of worship before they moved to Shiloh. So everybody really needs to understand how important that site is biblically. And so there's so much to excavate there. And because we cannot excavate, the only thing we could do is actually just, you know, to take the archaeological dump from the 1980s, move it to a secure location, and wet sift it. Because eventually, archaeologically, there's really no importance for an archaeological dump. But Adam Zertal in the 1980s didn't wet sift it.
Uh-huh.
And so we wet sifted the dumps, and we found some amazing stuff. We can't talk about it at the moment. But hopefully very, very soon, there's going to be a big declaration about something we did find in the dump. And that's what I can say right now.
I know Dr. Scott Stripling has used that method to great success at the site of Shiloh.
Correct.
And found some very amazing things there, too. So, yeah, we look forward to seeing what comes from this. It was one of the highlights of the tour, and I'd say one of the highlights of our ministry, being able to visit that site with a group from all over the world, a lot of Americans, but all over the world, and to repeat the declaration of Joshua there, choose you this day who you will serve, the God of your fathers or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.
Exactly.
That made the hair stand up on the backs of our necks. It was an amazing sight, and we're glad the site is still there. And there is some effort, or at least a growing awareness of the site. And hopefully that translates into an effort to preserve it.
Yes, and people from the group, I remember, said, you know, do you and Matt, do you understand? It happened here. It happened right here. And so this is definitely an exciting place to visit for every Bible believer. And, you know, I really urge people to read Adam Zertal's book,
yes,
A Nation Born, which talks about the discovery of Joshua's Altar. And they can find it on our website at hiddenisrael.net. And if you want to have more information about the altar, they can visit the altarofjoshua.com, which also includes a lot of information about the site. And we invite everyone to come to our tour in 2022.
Fascinating stuff. And we've got a copy of the book here. Where did I put the book?
Oh, yes. We do. And you know what? We don't carry that book at the Skywatch TV store, but you can go online and purchase it.
Yes. Well, Adam Zertal has written a couple of books, but we'll talk about this next week. This is sort of a tease ahead to next week's program, The Footsteps of God.
You've been reading ahead.
Because one of the footprints is the fence around the area there.
At Joshua's altar.
At Joshua's altar on Mount Ebal.
Which we didn't actually comprehend as we were standing there.
No. And we'll talk next week about how that recently was compromised, and it became a political issue between Israel and the Palestinian Authority.
It did indeed. Well, we want to hear from you, by the way. If you're enjoying the Bible's Greatest Mysteries and you want to maybe ask us a question or suggest a topic or a guest, send your email to BGM, as for Bible's Greatest Mysteries, BGM@skywatchtv.com.
We've got plenty of things lined up, topics to discuss, from ancient archaeology to megalithic structures.
That you can see if you go with us to Israel in 2022. Ha ha.
Yes.
Just go to skywatchinisrael.com and you'll see the entire itinerary there. You are going to want to go.
Absolutely. Our Lord and Savior spoke the universe into creation. The world is a fascinating and mysterious place, but there is nothing in this world or in this in all of creation that we should be afraid to investigate and question, because the Bible has answers.
Yes.
That is our mission on this program. Our faith is not a blind faith. Our Lord left evidence for us, the eyewitness testimony, but also the testimony of the rocks. As Jesus said,
Amen.
The rocks would cry out. You can quiet my followers, but if you do, even the rocks will cry out. Well, that's what we're discovering. And this is a wonderful and amazing journey, and we're glad that you're joining us for it. Thank you for watching. This is the Bible's Greatest Mysteries from Skywatch TV.